Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wiss.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg Soul with the Brothers Wiss, number 68. Today, we have our new friend, our new old friend. You've seen him before. It's Dave from Pennytone. Say hi, Dave.
Hi.
There you go. Sorry, my brain's a little scrambled today. Let's see, right off the bat, let's get the thank yous out of the way. Thank you to Sonar, sonar.software. They're a ISP billing platform. They kind of pull all of your customer information together, do all of your payment processing. They'll Radius authenticate, DHCP authenticate, take care of all the back end for you. So definitely go and check those cats out. They're really cool. A lot of different people I know are using them. A lot of people are investigating them. Give them a try. Never hurts to get out there and try new things. As far as new patrons go, we have Patreon. Patreon.com/TheBrothersWisp. You jump in there, you can get into the Brothers Only Slack. Whole lot of people. A new one is Hunter Podorf. We'll be hearing from him soon. I've sent him the invite. I haven't seen him pop in and say anything yet. Maybe he's lurking. And lurkers, that's fine. Feel free to lurk. I'm all good with that. I do that a lot. So let's jump into some of the good stuff. So I'm asking, who's using G.fast stuff, you know, and if you are using it, what did you use and what did you think about it? So G.fast, Dave, is kind of a DSL standard. I guess it's a relatively newer one. I know there's some G.fast chipsets that are starting to hit the market, and some different people are sort of taking those and integrating them into their products. It allows you to do at less than 500 meters, get 150 megs, right? And I think if you're a lot closer, then, right? So I'm thinking about MDU environments going in and like an apartment complex, say maybe it's a little bit older and you want to retrofit, it's all brick and it's too expensive to cable it. You could throw something like this in there and just use the existing phone wires to get some stuff through there. I know, I think you're looking at, I don't know, at a couple hundred meters, like 400 megs or something like that, I think is what I've heard, which is pretty damn good. I just want to see what people are using, if anybody is using it out there yet, and what they think about it. And also kind of curious about pricing. I think sort of like the little G.fast D-Slams, I think I heard that they're somewhere in the $2,000 range for maybe like less than 20 ports, maybe 16, maybe something like that. So I'd just be curious to see how that stuff stacks up. Any thoughts on that?
Well, actually, I used to work for an ISP back in the dot-com boom. I started out in tech support and made it up to senior network engineer, so I got to see some cool stuff. And I left there in 2001. I'm not going to mention their names because I don't like them. They were really verbally abusive. It was a bunch of stock traders. Later, I found out that it was actually a boiler room operation because it was a bunch of stockbrokers that started this to jump on the bandwagon for the dot-com bubble. So anyway, yeah, we used to deploy DSL, and once you said 500 meters, I was like, dude, that's like nothing. But when you said that it's for buildings, all right, now that makes perfect sense. And it seems to be really applicable in that scenario. Also, you said D-Slam. Now, D-Slams, I remember, they used to cost like upwards of $100,000, $200,000, and they were big and they were expensive, and you had to put them in like a Verizon building or something like that. So when you said it was $2,000, I'm guessing it's like probably something that looks like a switch. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah. So you see a lot of them nowadays that are kind of one U form factor. You know, they'll look just like a switch, and they'll have either, what is it, like an Amphenol connector like you normally see on 66 blocks on the side. Or kind of like an RJ45 sort of jack on those things. I know they do also make some sort of like outdoor kits where it's like an outdoor enclosure that you can put right next to like a little green pedestal and just kind of
kind of like Verizon or whatever. In California now it's called Frontier.
Yeah, they bought out Verizon down here too.
Oh god, dude, I'm not going to poo-poo anyone, but I'll make an exception in this case. Their operations were horrible, and what I don't like about Frontier is that their only peering for the Verizon network to get to the internet is level 3, and level 3 has been having some massive issues lately. And I know this because I do VoIP, so I need to keep an eye on the routes and latency and hops and all that. So, yeah, it's been they definitely should use a few more peers, not just level 3.
That's crazy. But, that's crazy. Yeah, hopefully they're a little bit more diversified in other places.
I hope so. But over here in California, in Southern Cal at least, do I have any customers up north? No, I don't. Actually, I have most of my customers in Southern Cal and New York. And sprinkled throughout the middle of America. But are you using Fios?
No. We don't have any Fios around here.
All right. But this looks really cool. Now, if it's a DSLAM, what is its what kind of cable is it using? Is it using just like a copper pair? What is it using to actually deliver service? And what is the customer going
to
use?
Should just be a pair of, just the Cat3 that happens to be in your building. You just take a pair and jam it into a modem.
Got it. And then a modem, what kind of modem? Because I haven't seen any DSL modems around forever since I left the ISP game. So what would be an example of a company that would be making some of the hardware as a CPE?
I don't know. See, that's what I'm curious about. I think it's sort of a generic chipset that are pumping out. So I think people are grabbing them. And I have heard of one guy, and I actually met him, who got the chipsets and started OEM in his own stuff.
Really?
Yeah. I was just curious to see, because, you know, I didn't want to taint anybody. I just wanted to see what comes back if we sort of put it out there. And then maybe the next cast will aggregate some of that stuff. Just kind of putting out a call, just curiosity. I would really like to test some of this stuff out. So I just want to see what people are using.
That is pretty cool. I mean, it's the first time I've heard it. And I'm looking at the Google Doc that you had posted for it, and doesn't really say anything much about it, just that it's what kind of modulation, what kind of duplex and channel coding. Anyway, so that's interesting. I'd definitely like to take a look into that. I have a customer in Manhattan, New York City. I manage the building's network. He's got like 6 floors. It's a shared office space building. This may have been a good thing for him a while back, but he's already built that. He has Ethernet like everywhere, so this would be perfect solution for a property manager that wants to retrofit or do what New York City does. All the landlords, they make deals with the ISPs and get kickbacks. That's why in New York City, if anybody is watching from New York City, you'll know that for some reason, there's only certain ISPs or some ISP you've never heard of that only provides internet service in that building. Well, it's because the landlord's taking kickbacks under the table, and because the landlord manages the building or even owns the building, they are allowed to say who and which company are allowed to put equipment in their building. So this would be a nice thing to fit into those old buildings and just offer services to all the tenants.
Yeah, in the bulk game, that's pretty commonplace. They usually do exclusive marketing agreements as well. Basically, anybody who wants to come in, they can't advertise, they can't put flyers on the doors, nobody, you know, inside the building can talk about this other company, so it effectively cuts them out of the loop. And then, yeah, it's their building, so if they don't want you poking holes in it, they're not gonna, I mean, there's no reason they have to let you do that. So,
yeah,
sort of tricky.
Yeah. So what do we have next on the list?
On the list, I have, Mike had put something up. Which I thought was sort of interesting, is that people with Libre NMS using CentOS, if they had kind of a nightly back or nightly update set on their CentOS servers, they woke up to a nice PHP conflict due to the auto update, which I saw several people in the Slack and made reference to, and I think at least a couple people got hit. So that's sort of a tricky one, which led to the inevitable discussion of, well, what do you use for your NMS? And of course, everybody knows Thomas is going to say NetXMS.
I think Libre NMS has a billing portion to it. Does NetXMS have like a bandwidth billing portion to it?
I don't think it does, but
yeah,
NetXMS is like super modular and configurable, and I mean, you can pay the devs to put whatever you want in there. Of course, they open it up to everybody else, I think, but still,
yeah,
you can have it done. Just sort of a by the by, if yours blew up,
got it. Sucks. Yeah, because I'm on I'm on Libre NMS's website, and it looks like they have a billing system that can fit right into this package. So I would imagine this would probably be for any type of data center or ISP or something like that. Someone that charges for bandwidth, so I guess only data center really. But yeah, this is something I'd like to circle back to a little bit later in the show, because there's a product that I found. It's not going to do billing, but it's a network monitoring system, and it's not like NetXMS, which, by the way, I've asked Thomas to install it for me because it looks so impressive, and I really loved everything. And I'm a big Zabbix fan. That's how I monitor pretty much everything that's like on my network and most of my customers' networks. I love Zabbix, but it does have two major drawbacks in my situation. And again, I'm not a coder and I'm not a programmer. So, you know, for me, when it comes to software, I like the one click and have it done kind of thing. And I don't want to go into a back end. I don't want to edit a database. And that's not me. I'm a network engineer. I get why people like that. But yeah, I'll just say it right now then. It's called Security Onion. And I'll tell you why this really grabbed me. So Security Onion, and it reminds me a lot of the MikroTik conventions, because when I went to the website, I saw that they have conventions, and they're having one in America in, I think, Georgia. And I was actually I'm still considering going, because it looks really interesting. It's kind of still in its grassroots phase. So basically, Security Onion is, it will pretty much do anything that you need to know about in terms of intrusions. And let's go to the website now, and yeah, it's going to monitor stuff.
It's a prepackaged install, right? So it installs and throws everything in there. I actually ran it a couple of years ago.
Really?
To do some collection and stuff, because it's got like, I think it had like Suricata integrated, maybe Snort integrated. Yeah. It had Bro. It had some other stuff at the time, but when I used it, it was still a little clunky. It didn't really, like, everything didn't really smoothly integrate together. Is that different now?
I guess so. It looks like they have a little grassroots following. They're starting, it reminds me how MikroTik started. In their early days, it was, you know, missing some features and it was a little buggy. But some people stay true to it because they saw the potential, maybe, who knows. Now it's, you know, to us, it's a household name, maybe not to everybody, but they're definitely one of my favorite routers out there, if not the favorite router out there, at least for layer 3 stuff. But let's go to securityonion.com. And just, if you just go to the screenshots right away, it's using Kibana to slice and dice your network data and hunt for adversaries. Yeah, it has a lot of automated stuff where you could put in like rules that say if this happens, if you pick up this kind of packets, or if you see this kind of traffic coming, you know, log it or just send us an alert. So it's kind of monitoring, but more geared towards security. It's not going to monitor what your CPU is doing. It doesn't care about that. It's strictly network security.
You know what's crazy? They've like entirely changed the tool set they used like 2 years ago. They're using, everything is different now.
Do you think you'd take another look at this?
Yeah, it looks like I need to. It looks like they've smoothed it out a lot, like a lot. What I liked about it was you didn't have to think about how do I install all these little individual pieces and how do I puzzle these sons of bitches together and then find out all the dependencies and it's basically you just throw it in there and it comes up and it's going and it's tuned and optimized. And I remember it being pretty heavy. Resource-wise.
Yeah.
But I remember
even,
over
here it even says that, and it's some of the forums that I've read about this say that, you know, it's a memory pig. It's going to take all the memory you could throw at it. But again, it depends how much bandwidth you're pushing. Like in my LA data center, I'm pushing about, I would say on average, about 30 megs sustained, and most of it is VoIP traffic. But the reason why I started even considering looking at something like this, and I was thinking of NTOP, but this has NTOP built in, NTOP NG built in, so it's the prettier version, is because in the data center, when I look at just my raw bandwidth logs, you know, and I'm using, again, Zabbix, so I get the MRTG graphs, and it shows something very interesting. The bandwidth usage almost looks like a heartbeat. Like, it spikes, it goes all the way down to, like, you know, 50, spikes up to, like, 40 megs, goes down to about 25, and just back and forth, up and down, up and down, up and down. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't seem normal for VoIP traffic. VoIP traffic is symmetrical. So I said, well, I know how much bandwidth I'm passing. I need to know what type of bandwidth. Like, is it HTTP traffic? Is it SIP traffic? Is it what kind of traffic is this? So that's when I started searching around, and I came across this, and, like, I was like, instantly fell in love. I was like, wow, I really have to try this. It seems to give a lot of good promise, but we'll see. That's all I could say about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything you, that's the new buzzword right now, right? Is security and intrusion prevention. And I mean, it theoretically rolls all that stuff for you in a nice, tidy, ready to go package. Not necessarily is it 100% intuitive. You still got to do a little learning, still got to do a little research and figure out how the tools work. But, you know, I mean, it seems like a lot of the stuff is there. I remember turning Andrew Thrift onto it. I'm not sure how far he got with it or if he's still using it. That actually segues right into something I had on here that comes up from time to time, which is NetFlow collection, right? And so NetFlow being your router's ability to export statistical information to a collector. I'm doing air quotes here, a collector, which will tell you source IP, destination IP, source port, destination port, and how much moved in that given time, right? So it's basically, you can see who went where and how much they moved in that time period, right? So it's good for looking for top talkers and things like that. But yeah, like you said, you get a call from somebody and they say, hey, you know, the internet connects, so a lot of people that listen to this are ISPs. And so us being one of those, we'll get a call from somebody saying, hey, the internet's bad today. What's happening? And you'll look and they're maxing out their bandwidth on their interface. And you say, well, it looks like you guys are peeking over. And they'll say, well, do you have any idea what we're doing? You know, and it's like, well, it's kind of your network, you know, you shouldn't, you know, but, because these are all enterprise customers we're dealing with. So it's like, you know, shouldn't you be watching your stuff? So it's nice to actually, instead of just saying, shouldn't you be watching your stuff or no, we don't really keep that information, to be able to, you know, just run a quick report and say, well, it looks like this is what's happening. Looks like you're going here, or this one IP address is really getting utilized. And, we've had that before. I mean, it's usually fairly innocuous. Like, we started doing this new backup and we forgot to put a rate limit on it. And it's it runs every night at the same time, or runs every day, or, you know, or we just started doing replication of this one SAN and forgot blah blah blah. You know, I mean, it's stuff like that. It's not usually anything too insane, or you can pick up patterns, things like that. You know, when Bob comes into work, the bandwidth spikes until he leaves. You know, because he's BitTorrenting all day while he's at work, stuff like that. So who was it? Nick B said that he's using ElastiStack with ElastiFlow, and I did a little research on that, and that stuff looks super pretty. It's really cool looking.
And it's built into Security Onion.
Well, there you go.
That's pretty awesome.
He also said he used to use NFSense and NDFump. I think he meant NDump. I don't know.
Yeah,
And then Tom Smith, you know, he's an NTOP guy, and I used to use NTOP back in the day. I think everybody's heard of it at some point.
I used it. It was incredibly ugly, but it gave you the information that you were hoping to find.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing I forgot to mention is there's commercial products that do these things. But most of the folks listening to this don't always have the budget for commercial products, so...
Yeah, SolarWinds. What is SolarWinds up to now? Like 20,000 for their everything package?
I don't know. It's pretty intense. Yeah, I know some organizations who run it. You know, and if you can, more power to you. I guess it's nice to have a vendor you can call or load it up on a Windows machine and just double click and know that it's all going to work. You don't have to think about it. I don't know. But look, that's cool.
There's so many free tools out there. Like like this Libre NMS, I'm definitely going to take a peek at this. This looks pretty cool. It says network monitoring, so I don't know if it's just bandwidth. I mean, again, I'm gonna look into it and see what it's all about. And then, of course, I'm definitely gonna look at Security Onion and NetXMS, all for different reasons. But yeah, I mean, with what's going on with open source software, free software, it's really amazing where it started. It was never supposed to work out. In theory, but it did, and it's pretty much taking over the internet, and I'm very happy about that because I'm a huge Linux fan. But getting back on to topic.
No. That's what this is all about. Yeah, for sure. I got dragged into Linux kicking and screaming. I think I still stay outside of that sphere a little bit. I'm not necessarily a Windows guy, but a lot of my application development background was on Windows and stuff. And so I can just bash out the quickest, ugliest scripts on a Windows box in no time. And honestly, my engineers, you know, like the guys on my team, sometimes it's easier for them to maintain a Windows machine than it is a Linux box. Not to say I don't have guys that do a great job of that, but...
You know, I mean, Thomas is going to see you saying this, and he's going to be very disappointed with you.
Nah. He gets it. He works with government people that are stupid like me. He knows how it is.
Oh, man, we got to loosen him up. He's a little uptight. What's going on? We got to bring him over to America, get him drunk.
He's just working too hard. Working too hard, man. That's his problem. All right.
Yeah.
So I've got a project coming up, and I was just going to tap and see what other people thought they would do. So I've got kind of a co-working space coming up. And to Dave earlier asked, what is a co-working space? It's more or less an office environment where you can go, and some of them will let you lease by the hour or lease by the day. You know what I mean? You get like a desk,
like,
phone.
That's like WeWork or what is the other one? Regis and WeWork. Those are the two that I know. They're huge in California. So tell me about this.
All right, so this one's not going to be huge. I think it's like 17 offices. They've got like a conference room and a kitchen, sort of like a little lounge area. So it's not enormous. And I think they're doing not necessarily by the day or hour, but I think they're doing like monthly leases on these offices.
Yeah.
So it's going to be more of a static environment. So just curious what other people, like what their thoughts are on that. What we're going to do, or what my plan to do, is just... drop an IP phone in every office. It's going to have a DID with a voicemail account. I'm thinking about doing it email. So whenever it grabs the voicemail, it just emails it out and doesn't actually store it on the server. Because, I mean, I think some of the people, from just doing a little research on co-working spaces and talking to some other people that work with them, a lot of times people who live out of town and just come into town occasionally and need an office, they'll lease these things. So... it's more convenient for them because they're not necessarily going to be sitting there. Just going to do so if they lease one office, then they'll have kind of a private network just there. If they have two offices, I'll just put them on the same land, nothing complicated, and then have some access points that have an SSID for each customer. That way, if they connect to the wireless, it actually connects into the same land. I was thinking about doing a pool of bandwidth and then guaranteeing each customer, say like 10, 15 megs, and then, you know, just letting them burst up to whatever the max happens to be, you know, or maybe 50 megs. I don't know what, you know, I mean, just, I like using round numbers for just describing things. Like, so if they got like 100 megs total to the co-working space, I would give each person guaranteed 10, and then they could burst, sort of thing. I think that would, in my mind, that's going to be really easy to configure, really easy to maintain. Should stay pretty straightforward and just very generic, rinse and repeat, protect the guys from each other.
Yeah. Actually, you know, you're totally reading my mind when you were talking about how you're going to set it up, because that building in Manhattan, they have something like, I forget how many offices, I think, what is it, about 40 offices a floor, and it's 6 floors. So do your math. But what I did was exactly what you said. I VLAN'd every single office so that it's in its own network. you know, so if they have whatever 4 or 5 ports in a particular office, those are going to be PVID'd to whatever. And I made the VLAN number their office number, just so it's easy to, you know, reference. And then for the for the wireless, I just did Ubiquiti all over the place on every floor, and I made the SSIDs the name of the building with the room number. Or the office number, and that would, of course, that wireless would VLAN to the same VLAN as their wired network. So no matter where they go, they'll always be able to print at their printer in their office, as long as they're in the, you know, in the building or within wireless range. And then, of course, the phones, yeah, same thing. I just VLAN the phones like I always do, but those are tagged VLANs. And then, of course, bandwidth management is a huge thing, because in a building that has probably 600-plus people, or maybe 500, I don't even know, I haven't checked in a while, but you know, once you set these things up, they just work. There's not much changing you need to do. Unless one tenant takes multiple offices, then you just VLAN all those offices, but I totally lost my train of thought, man.
<Where was I? laughs> You were talking about bandwidth management.
I think my mouth bored my face. So yeah, and the funny thing is, in America, for some reason, nobody does bandwidth management, and I think that is incredibly important, not just for the end users, but for example, if you have routing protocols going on in your network, if you're running OSPF or if you're running VRRP as a failover for a router, like if the network gets congested, and I'm not talking about internet, but internal bandwidth, if it's getting congested for whatever reason. Let's say there's a network loop and you don't have SDP on for whatever reason, you know, you're going to start dropping OSPF packets or VRRP packets, and those are network critical packets that need to get through. If they don't, other routers are going to get false positives saying, hey, that guy is no longer there. He might be dead, and let's change routes, and or let's take the failover router and make it the master because it hasn't gotten an update in, you know, whatever amount of seconds. And that will very quickly bring down your network. So, you know, bandwidth prioritization and queuing is like so necessary in every scenario. I don't care what anyone says. I will fight them nail and tooth on this. Go ahead, challenge me. So, but yeah, I think it's incredibly important. So I do that with all of my customers, especially because they're all using VoIP.
Yeah.
And I want to get into why that's so important. But it also keeps their... for most of my customers, they're just, you know, office with an internet connection. So when they will never max out all the available bandwidth for, let's say, voice over IP or HTTPS. So if somebody's on YouTube browsing, like Matt Wilson, they're a customer of mine. It's pro bono work, but they originally only had 10 megs at the top of this mountain. And whenever somebody needed to... do something important, scientific research that's important, they would let out a memo email to everybody on the mountain, don't use the internet between these times. And that is very primitive. So when I got there, I was like, well, first thing we need to do is bandwidth management, because you only have 10 megs and you have a whole mountaintop of scientists that need to do things. And at night, some of the guys would go on Netflix. Netflix will very quickly, high def will very quickly eat all your bandwidth. So I implemented bandwidth management, and like, with several different ways of prioritizing traffic, you know, obviously the most important being TCP ACKs, because if those TCP ACKs don't get through, if those are dropped, then you're retransmitting data that has already been transmitted that may have been transmitted successfully. So I'll do that as number one. Then I'll do other things like DNS, which is important. What else? Obviously my SIP stuff. I do HTTP stuff, VPN stuff, that's big. They have a lot of VPNs, like even SSL VPNs and SSH VPNs. So I give that priority. Lowest priority is HTTP, HTTPS, and then any packets that are unmarked, of course, get lowest priority. So it's important. I think everybody needs to do it. I know everybody should do it, and nobody does, at least in America.
Well, I do it on most of my enterprise customers, I think, actually. I have some queuing of some sort or another, unless they're on like a gig fiber connection or something like that, then it's usually not terribly important.
Tell them why it's not important if you, cause there is a reason. Well, there is a reason. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, so when you're talking about quality of service, you hit the nail on the head. You have to pick the things that are important to you and give them precedence over everything else, right? Because
only when there's a traffic jam.
Exactly.
Only when you've maxed out. So if you have a gig, what are the chances of you maxing out a gig? I mean,
right. So yeah, that's another fair point. Quality of service only happens when there's congestion, right? And so you actually have to define what's the maximum this internet connection is, right, on your quality of service ball. So you have to say, all right, my full connection is a gig. But what happens when you're in a network that's like a PON network or like on a coax plant, you know, doing DOCSIS? That's an oversubscribed media, right? So, you know, when everybody's somewhere else at 9 a.m, you might be getting, you know, you'd be getting your full gig or whatever. But then, you know, once everything starts popping off, you might only get 500 megs, right? So if you have your quality of service policy set for a gig and you start getting packet loss at 500 megs, your quality of service is moot. There's no, you know, like in record take. So you actually have to artificially set that lower for kind of an internet connection. So you'd have to set your policy to 500 megs. So that's sort of tricky. And I'm assuming there's some clever ways of working around that. And I'm sure there's people who will tell me that.
There's none that I know of, because it's all dependent on how much available bandwidth you have. And if that changes from the ISP, then prioritization can never happen because you can never reach your max.
Yeah.
So
it's tricky.
I don't know any way to work around that.
Yeah. So it's like, do you want to artificially set your bandwidth low, or do you want to just, you know, the few times that it does choke down and, you know, man, I'll just suffer through that. So it's like sort of, what scenario do you want to deal with? It's kind of interesting. And then it doesn't reorder your packets. Quality of service doesn't say, all right, well, this VoIP stuff you get to send first. It basically just says, the stuff that's not as important, you have a higher likelihood of dropping.
Exactly.
That's all it really does. So it's not reordering your packets. It's not picking the good stuff and saying, you get to go through first. It's just, you know, you don't get the fast pass at Disney World. They don't zip you to the front or whatever.
That's the best way to put it. I usually describe it as like, in LA, we have the 405, and that thing is jam-packed at around anywhere between 3 and 6 o'clock. You're crawling. But what has priority to go through? Ambulance, police. So when there's a traffic jam, there's this special lane that and every city has it, a special lane that the police can just zip right through. So that's exactly what prioritization does. It's going to drop or put on hold, then drop packets that are in a queue if available bandwidth hasn't freed up. So yeah, pretty much how to describe it in a nutshell.
So what do you think about Elon Musk's building tunnels out there in LA? That's in your neighborhood.
I'll tell you, honestly, my opinion of Elon is this guy has big visions and he puts his money where his mouth is. And I don't know him personally. I don't know what his personal life is like, even though he's dating that musician chick. I'm not going to say anything about that, but I think so far everything he has attempted has done well. So if he wants to do something to improve transportation by making tunnels, I'm all for it.
I was reading that his first tunnel is supposedly going to be ready for traffic in the next like couple months or something, or a couple weeks.
Aren't they testing it somewhere in Nevada?
I don't know. Yeah, he put up a video on his Instagram or something of his first tunnel there in LA, saying that it was almost ready.
Wow, I don't follow that. I live under a rock, so I'm not big on Instagram or Twitter or anything.
I'm not either. It popped up on Google News the other day. That's the only reason I saw it.
Oh, really? Yeah. When I look at Google News, I'm looking for politics smut. I love reading that stuff. It's the new entertainment. So I just look. I hunt out that stuff. So my Google feed only gives me the stuff that they know I eat up. Like Rick and Morty being signed for another 70 episodes. I couldn't be happier.
Wow, that's intense. Hopefully it takes a happier turn. I started rewatching it with my kids, and I'm not a terrible parent. Yeah, you're right. Season one, I'd forgotten just how good it was, but it wasn't like so depressing, because that last season was, you know,
it's
just
dark.
At the end of it's just everything you need to keep from slitting your wrist. You know, it's just was rough, man. I mean, there were good episodes, like if you like the Pickle Rick and stuff like that, there were some really good episodes. But Jesus, you know, if you ever listened to Harmontown, like his podcast,
Dan Harmon. Actually, since you told me about it, I did.
Yeah, too. Some of that stuff is pretty bleak too. So I get it. That's like what's in his head.
Yeah,
it's just, I don't know. I kind of missed like the happy-go-lucky episodes, you know, where they were just up to shenanigans.
Hey, where it starts out, I think opening, the pilot was Rick is drunk and he's like, I built a bomb. I'm just going to blow up the earth and start over.
Yeah, with Morty and Jessica or whatever. You know, rebuild civilization.
Summer.
Whatever. Yeah, there you go. No, Summer's his sister, right?
Yeah.
No, it was his, like, his high school crush that he was going to go pick up.
Oh, you mean Morty's?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good one. That was a good one.
Ridiculous.
Can't get enough of that. So let's move on to Microtik Layer 2.
Yeah. You had some thoughts on it. Let's hear your thoughts. Remember, Microtik's listening.
I like to talk about the good, but I like even more to talk about the bad. So it's a lot more exciting, you know. So I'm gonna start by saying I really love Microtik. I love their I do. I love their
philosophy. I feel a butt coming.
I love their philosophy, I love their product. The guys, once you're in their circle, they're awesome. The Microtik employees, when you're out of their circle, oh boy, that's a whole different level of outside. What was it from what is it, the Meet the Fockers? Outside the family circle or whatever he called it. Remember when you're outside? So, yeah, so I love Microtik. I use it every day. Part of the reason why my service is so good is because of how precise Microtik can be configured for prioritization and other such things. But one thing that I really can't stand about Microtik, and maybe it's just me, but I'd love to hear what other people have to say about Microtik's layer two stuff. So Microtik working as a switch, I don't like it.
Are you talking about Switch OS? Because I think universally nobody likes Switch OS. I think that's easy. Let's not even talk about that.
But I'm talking about Router OS. Router OS to do anything layer two, to make one port, okay, a VLAN, to PVID one port, man, the things you got to jump through. You got to go to three different places, configure three different things, set up a bridge, set up in the bridge configuration, you have to pick that this is going to be its own PVID, give it a VLAN number. Too much. I like it when I just go into, and for switching, I mean, for layer two stuff, just go into, like, let's say I like Cisco switches, right? Their small business stuff is surprisingly fantastic. Same thing with Netgear, different interface, but both lifetime warranty, so who cares? But let's say for Cisco, you go in and you can tag all ports part of a VLAN. You could port VLAN ID in like 2 seconds, and it's a piece of cake. But with Microtik, I get it. It's not a switch. But wow, is it difficult.
Yeah, and something you said right there really is important to me is you said tag, you know, and so it's industry standard term to say tag something for VLAN or untag, you know.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, they don't like to use kind of common nomenclature for stuff like that. I wish they would, because virtually everybody else does. Everybody else uses the tag or untag, you know, or Cisco, it's like access VLAN or trunk. It's like so simple. It's either this or it's this, you know, and it's very intuitive and makes sense. And obviously, Microtik kind of does their own thing, and the things they do it in their own way, and I get that. And Thomas Kernack, if he was on here right now, he would say that it's not so bad once you figure out how you're supposed to do it. It actually makes sense and has this flow. All right, but for like human beings, like normal mere mortals, you know, if you've always been a Cisco guy or always been, I don't know, take your pick, you understand the concept of tag and untag. If they would just extend that same nomenclature, man, it would clear things up so much.
Yeah, one thing I always say about Microtik is, you know, a lot of people that start using Microtik, it humbles you real quick, because you realize that you quickly realize that you are actually not working on a front end with pretty pictures and pretty buttons where you click and magic things happen. You know, this, I like to call it like you're working almost on the back end, I would say, where you're working on the nuts and bolts that make network happen, make networking happen. So yeah, it sharpens you as a network engineer, but it also breaks you down. It's like going into the Marines. You start there day one, man, you can't do nothing right. and then when you come out, you're a well-oiled machine. So
yeah,
I think MicroTik does that to you. And you know what? That analogy kind of goes along with the MicroTik folks.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely, you know, it's, what just, I mean. It's cultural. Yeah, I definitely get that. But I know what you mean. So I was, and on Cisco stuff, I still use Cisco daily, and I'm a CLI guy. You know, there is no GUI for me when it comes to that. I just, it's in my brain. I'll forget my wife's birthday, but I'll never forget, you know, complex Cisco commands for whatever reason.
Dude, you're so screwed.
No, but I remember the transition to MicroTik was really difficult because I was looking for things like a Cisco engineer. So I would go to interface and I would try and set an IP, and it's not there. It's like IP address. Okay. And then routing, it's over here. And so it just, that was sort of my journey in there. But what's crazy now is whenever I'm given a task, a problem, a project, I usually think, how can I accomplish this? And I can figure out how to do it in MicroTik, and I could implement it in 30 seconds, where in a Cisco environment, it'd probably take me 20, 30 minutes to put the same configuration up. Just because I have, like, my workflow has gotten so fast through Winbox on the MicroTik.
Yeah.
I can just, so like in Cisco, it's not hard to create a DHCP server, but you have to create a pool. And then you have to go, and then you create the server, and then you do some of the attributes. Whereas in MicroTik, you click setup, next, you know, choose the interface, what's the range, blah, 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 finished. You know, it's like that fast.
Wait a minute, that is the one thing that you could do that's like a wizard-ish thing in MicroTik without using the quick set. Screw quick set. They should take it out. That's just going to give people false hope.
Yeah, you know? I've actually never configured anything with QuickSet before.
I don't think anyone that's MicroTik certified ever did. If you did, be ashamed of yourself and don't ever tell anyone that you used it.
Well, I get it. They're trying to lower the barrier of entry for people, so I see the appeal of QuickSet. I mean, I get what they're trying. Just like with their new wireless wire stuff, they're pre-configured to be a link, right? You know, so they're trying to open it up to a broader audience because, like you said, the fear and uncertainty of getting into the MicroTik stuff. And then if you look at the 60 gig configuration, it's a little odd, setting up the, I mean, again, I know Thomas is listening and you're right. Once you figure out the flow, it's fine. It's just, it's a little weird the very first time you sort of look at it. So it's nice that they have it pre-configured and done. And also that they actually, on those wireless wires, have default passwords. I think that's pretty good because, I think most people are just going to throw, like, people that don't have any networking knowledge are going to grab these things and chunk them in. And so it's probably best that they are secured like that, out of the box.
Now, just to explain, wireless wires is MicroTik's new 60 gigahertz, wireless point to point antennas. Actually, I think I have let me go get the box. Should I run and get it? It's in the other room.
If you want.
You got one right here. You got one right here.
Yeah, I've got a couple right up there, actually. Yeah. Right there. But it's just a WAP form factor, and we've talked about those suckers a lot. I'm actually, I've got a pair in production. I know Miller's got, he's got more than a dozen, I think, in production. And everybody's, you know what, it's basically whetting everybody's appetite for the LHG one that they had in the last newsletter. That guy's supposed to go about a mile, they're saying, full duplex gig. So I'm interested. I'm definitely ready for that.
Yeah, well, at that high of a frequency, you got to have, like, super clear line of sight, no heat trails, no no rain, no bird flying by, none of that.
It's going to be, I don't know. I mean, I know wireless isn't like a laser, right? It doesn't go in this perfect straight little line. It's shaped more like a football, right? The Fresnel zone. But this 60 gig stuff, It's going to be pretty damn small. So, and it's going to be fairly isolated. So in these noisy environments, theoretically, you'll be, you know, you won't have as much interference. And that's sort of like I'm looking for is urban environments where I can get high throughput. Even if the distance isn't terribly far, I don't have to worry about interference anymore or as much.
Yeah, I don't think it's interference is not going to be your enemy in that with that product or with not even the product, just at that frequency. It's just going to be that it's such a high frequency that you better have good clear line of sight, no heat trails, like I said, and you know rainy days may screw you because water just sucks up that stuff.
Yeah. Oof. I mean, I was trying to shoot through a pane of glass and it wouldn't link up. Period.
No, zero. Because we can see through it doesn't mean radio wave. Frequency of radio waves can go through it.
60 gig does not like that. So it does make me curious. We haven't had a good rain since I put that link in. Hopefully it's just going to drop modulation rate and not drop altogether. But honestly, I'm only doing like, I think the shot the customer's only contracted for 100 megs. And, you know, if I'm doing a gig and it drops down to 500, I kind of don't care. If the modulation goes down
with rain, I should probably look up at what frequency does water resonate at or what frequencies does water resonate at, because I know 2.4 water resonates at like between like what, 1 and 2 something gigahertz. It'll just suck up all that frequency, but 60 gigahertz, I don't know.
Yeah, because it's millimeter wave, so it's really really small. The wave is really small on that guy. What you could do is just set up your wireless wire in the backyard, hit it with the water hose, man. Just turn on the sprinkler, see what it does.
That's a good idea. Or sneeze in front of it.
I don't know. It's been solid for me, and we're in a pretty dry environment, so
down here. You're Texas. Don't you guys have like a monsoon season?
We got everything. It depends on where you're at. I mean,
get snow. You don't get snow. Don't tell me you got everything.
It snowed here this year. It was the first time I had ever actually seen snow. We even built legit snowmen. I'm talking like they were like 4 foot tall. It was crazy.
That's like half your height.
I learned that snowballing is a real thing. Once you just roll it, it just picks up more and more. You know, it was like, it's just like in the cartoons, man. That's crazy.
Not in New York. In New York, snow turns into mud. quickly get mud balls.
It's pretty cool, but we get droughts, we get a lot of heat, we get a lot of humidity here. But then out in West Texas, man, it's like the desert. You know, it's very arid, dry. It sucks. Nobody lives there. I can't imagine why you'd want to. But yeah, we got all kind of climates here. Anyway, that's the Microtik layer 2 stuff. Yeah, I can circling full circle all the way back around. I would definitely like to see them use kind of the normal nomenclature. I think that would help tremendously on stuff like that. And then I know with some of the new stuff like the CRS, the 300 series stuff, the chipsets they're using have a lot of new features that they're going to be unlocking soon. You know, it's going to be a lot of stuff's going to be offloaded in hardware, so they have a ton of capability.
Yeah, and Microtik just unveiled their PoE switch, which I think, I mean, let's see what their Switch OS is going to, if it's going to have any upgrades or anything nice to it, because having a PoE switch is great, because I'm a phone guy, and all the phones are PoE, but let's see if it's useful or practical to configure, because, I mean, with a Cisco, I can set it up literally in about, I think, 2 minutes. And get everything VLAN and everything working right. I could even do a little QoS for the LAN, but it happens very quickly. But again, it goes against Microtik's philosophy of they don't like one-click configurations at all. And unfortunately, when you're switching, it should be easy, because how much could you configure on a switch? I mean, yeah, there's some funky stuff. You can do IGP snooping. You can do all sorts of fancy stuff, but for the core stuff, just VLAN stuff, which, I mean, let's face it, that's basically one of the most fundamental functions of a switch is to VLAN or segment, and let's make that easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, take the number one thing it's going to be used for and make that as simple as possible, and then build from there. Seems like a fair good philosophy. If you can't figure out how to open the door on the car, how good is the car going to be for you?
You saw that video with the Asian guy? He puts his head in there to test to see how well the sensor works in case someone's in the door and it doesn't close on the door. It's like the minivan door. The idiot puts his head and it just fucking takes his head.
That's such a terrible idea. That's like I heard somebody say that they were they were like suing their hotel or their landlord because they burned their genitals in the shower. I was thinking, that's a hell of a way to test the water. You know what I mean? Just lean it in first. Just put your hand in there, you know? Or they say the back of your hand, put your back of your hand in there and just feel it out first, you know? You're doing it all wrong. Oh, man.
I gotta look that up. That is so bad. That is the Darwin Award of the Year.
That's crazy.
Well, luckily, that guy won't be having any offspring, thank God. Won't pass the idiot gene on to anyone.
Nah, he'll be right as rain in a couple months. All right, that's awesome. Dude. Well, we're nearing the hour mark. This is usually where we chop it. Do you have anything else you want to throw in, or do you want to save everything else for later?
That's pretty much it for today. Just to recap, I'm gonna be looking at Security Onion. Hopefully you'll take a look at it again.
Yeah, I'll give it another day in court.
Yeah, and you said Libra, and we talked about Libra NMS. I'm totally going to take a look at that. It just looks like something else to at least understand what it does and how it does things. Who is it really geared for? Let's see. The Elastistack, well, that was in the Security Onion.
I love you doing this cute little recap.
Oh, you're going to do it? I'm sorry.
No, we never recap it. It's cute. I like it.
Why not? Who's GFast? Who is using GFast? GFast is cool. This is the first time I heard of it. I thought it was a dead technology, but that's kind of interesting. Lighting up buildings, it's very practical.
You know, it's funny. You say a dead technology. We went to a fiber conference, one of the broadband communities, and they were talking about how, you know, copper is dead. You got to go fiber to everything, fiber to all the things, and then... You know, the question came up. It's, you know, it's we keep coming out with novel ways of pushing more bandwidth through copper. So how can you say that copper is dead? You know, if I have a resource in the wall and I can keep getting life out of it, why would I? You know, they're like, because this is the future. And I was like, yeah. But if I have to spend the same amount of money now or later, you know, I could always put that off until I can realize some additional revenue first, and then, I don't know. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a matter of cost and time, and if every building has copper in it, why not? Just throw this in, and your customers are going to be happy, you'll be making money, and it's not going to, you don't have to tear open any walls or run new wires or anything like that, so great.
I mean, if you can buy yourself another 10 or 15 years, I'm easily going to be dead in like 8, so... I do not care the least.
All right. Only because you don't remember your wife's birthday.
No, I remember it because she's she's a year and a month older, so it's like to the day, so it's really easy for me to remember. That was an example. It's an example of things that could occur. All right, David. So if people are going to find you out on the internet, how would you like them to do that?
Easiest way is just you could go to my website and just call me. Or you can email me.
You have to say what those things are.
Okay, so my company is Pennytone, like penny like 1 cent, tone like dial tone, so pennytone.com. And you can reach me at 805-410-8022. And my email address is david@pennytone.com.
Nice. All right. Cool. If you want to find me, Greg Soule, you can find me at gregsoule.com. I'm occasionally blogging still. I updated my, my Portnoc application not too long ago because of that MikroTik vulnerability. And I got an email from Google saying that I had malicious code. And I looked it up and apparently autoed, if you're doing TCP ports, they got flagged in some viruses that people wrote a million years ago. So I guarantee you there's no viruses. I've just recompiled everything fresh. The code's on there. So feel free to do that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That was just in my head. Yeah, if you want to grab me, greg@gregsoule.com, or hit me through the form. You can contact me there. I'm actually going to be doing some network coaching here pretty soon, which is something I talked about a long time ago, so I'm looking forward to that. But to put a bow on it, hit us on Facebook, facebook.com/thebrotherswisp, all the stuff that goes up there. That's pretty much Mikey. He's been a little bit slow on the draw lately. You can always tell when he gets busy. There's only like 3 posts a day. but yeah, he's very responsive on there. If you want to join our Slack, it's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Love to have you in there. A lot of good stuff going back and forth. Actually, some of the stuff that's on here came from the Slack. All those guys are super responsive. I love it, man. I love that community we're building. If nothing else, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time.